Education Matters Facebook page.
Support for WGTD comes from Andreas. Visit andreasgifts.com to shop their exclusive hometown collection, including Kenosha t-shirts, sweatshirts, books, and more. Now offering online ordering from Jack's Cafe, andreasgifts.com.
Jazz, swing, blues, bop, and more from WGTD is available 24 hours a day on your desktop or laptop, smartphone, or radio. To access 24/7 Jazz WGTD on your computer, go to WGTD.org. On your smartphone, download the free WGTD app. In the Kenosha Racine area, 24/7 Jazz HD2 is available via HD radio. And in the Waukegan and Pleasant Prairie areas, the service is being broadcast temporarily over analog radio at 103.3 FM. For more information, call 262-564-3030.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta on Community Matters. Our guest today is Jim Cruiser, the county executive of Kenosha County. Good morning, Jim.
Good morning, Len. It's a beautiful day in Kenosha County.
Yes, it sure is. We're recording this just one day before broadcast, listeners. And if you hear some odd noises, some pounding and sawing in the background, we are not sawing Jim in half. We just have a little construction going on in the building.
And they're making great progress.
Yes, we're proud of them. And we're even more excited about something called Foxconn that has announced that it might be putting up a plant to build iPhones in southeastern Wisconsin. No clue as to where that was be in the public media yet. Jim, I want to know everything you know about Foxconn that won't get you into trouble.
I read with great interest about Foxconn, and through confidentiality, I know a few things. But what I can tell you is this, is that it would be a perfect fit for somewhere in southeastern Wisconsin. And the partners are working together to make it a viable site in one of those areas. And they're going to make that business decision. But it's got to be a win-win. It can't be a one-way street just for a big business to come in. We have to take care of the community and make sure that it's compatible. But if this occurs and we're in play, all right, why are we in play? We're in play because of companies like Haribo, which put us not only regionally but nationally, but now internationally. People are looking at Kenosha County, and they're looking at us very seriously. We have a good logistical area. We have a good manufacturing base. We have people who get up and go to work and show up on time and can be trained with a very good technical college, Gateway Technical College, which has worked with companies like Snap-on and Kennel and made them very successful in our area, and dozens more, not just those. So when you look at how the community, the governmental agencies, the educational institutions in our area, how they pull together, state and federal Democrats and Republicans circle the wagons when they can get an opportunity of economic development of business in our community because it creates jobs. And that's what our community has done better than most communities. And it really draws a contrast to when you look at some of the, issues in Illinois, where there's not a pulling together. There's disruption at the state and local level on some number of areas. And Kenosha County, with Kenosha Area Business Alliance, of course, working strongly with them. And we've been working strong at the state level, and Peter Barker is on WEDC, and they've been seamless in the last seven. I think they've been involved seven in the last 2 years of job announcements here in Kenosha County. We're all pulling the pieces together, and I think that is something that is different than other communities.
We're in competition with Metropolitan Detroit, according to the Associated Press, are we not? Maybe others.
And I think there's others. There's a lot that I am not aware of. And I think we put our best foot forward. Something may result of this, and maybe even if it's not this one, other people are exposed to the great things in southeastern Wisconsin, and we may get somebody else. Now, let's just say a what-if game. What if this goes to Waukesha, goes to Racine, goes to Oak Creek? There's still going to be a number of spinoffs and supply chain issues and places where Kenosha could end up being the winner of smaller companies, which has really been our key to success moving forward since the engine plant has closed.
So you're seeing a multiple effect here of just like we used to have with the auto industry, of it creating other supplier jobs.
Absolutely, and we fit right into that sweet spot.
Well, what about the downside of this? Don't make me have to bring up the saw now, but you know, 5,000 people, where are they going to come from? What impact will that have on the local labor force and other employers?
Let's see. You have a lag time from when it's going to be built, wherever it's going to be built. You're going to have, I'm sure, housing for a number of people that may help the local construction trade of single-family homes, which still needs a shot in the arm. There's multifamily going on. That would probably go higher end and tick upward. A lot of those where people can live is fine. The training is how many people will come here, how many people will transfer, how many people have to be homegrown, what are the educational components. And, yes, we may be drawing back some of the brain drain we lost and may, in fact, end up with boomerang Kenoshans coming back to town.
Well, what kind of jobs are these? You know, we hear some pretty horrible stories about iPhone manufacturing in China, mile-long plants, people not being paid for the time they have to spend going from one end to the other, people committing suicide because the work's so hard, a huge amount of robotics. Are there going to be any skilled jobs in a plant like this? Do you know anything about what we're creating here? Or is this just the equivalent of the warehouse industry, a lot of low-skilled jobs and one manager who lives in Lake Forest?
This is going to be a manufacturing operation if it comes forward, and I'm not allowed to drill any deeper into that, but I appreciate your pushing me into deeper water like you do so well, Len.
You can't claim executive privilege. I'm sorry. Sorry, Jim.
But I think, like I said at the outset, when you have opportunities of a large scale, whatever they may be, you need to make sure what's the risk-benefit and make sure that you put the community first. You don't want to be in a situation where it's not a balanced equation where it's win-win. Then you just have to let it move on to another community.
And there are issues with any kind of manufacturing, with pollution. We know that all kinds of things go into phones that you're not supposed to throw into the garbage and that are dangerous. So there will be a lot of issues like that in terms of environmental, too, won't there?
Well, you know, one of the great resources we have that others don't is the great water utility we have. Ed St. Peter runs a tremendous operation. There was just an open house last weekend, and many people went through it. And really, it's enlightening and reassuring that we have some of the best drinking water in Kenosha of anywhere in the nation.
That's for sure. When I have guests in town, I say, let's just have Lake Michigan's finest, because we have the best water plant around, and we were way ahead of the others, weren't we?
Absolutely, and he does a fine job there, and he stands on the shoulders of old Fred Nelson.
You got great it. Guy. Loved him.
And, long-standing tradition, and they take their work very seriously, and we feel very safe every time we turn on our tap here, and I thank them for that.
But whenever there's a large manufacturing plant, there are issues with the air pollution limits we have in our area. Have you heard anything about this kind of manufacturing that would cause us concern with respect to coming up against those federal regulations, Jim?
I don't have any details or particularized details on that part. I know that the federal government is looking at being a major partner in this. If that was an issue, this site or this area wouldn't even be included if that was a non-starter.
I see. Very interesting. It's the time of year when people are starting to talk about the state budget, and you're going to be talking about the county budget a lot before long. You're probably thinking about it a little bit. Maybe we should start by telling the listeners what's the status of the county budget overall, and then what there's a lot of talk in Madison about this and that, and that could have an effect on our taxes and our budget and the services that you and the county board are able to provide. What do we need from Madison that we may or may not get that you want to call to our attention? But let's start with how we're doing right now in terms of our finances, in terms of our debt limit, et cetera.
Sure, and I may differ with you a little bit. I think some people are more interested in the beginning of summer, the kids getting out of school and hitting the lake or hitting the waterfront for some entertainment, but we will talk about the budget.
Well, they've got a lot of choices. Kenosha County in the Get Out Guide in the Kenosha News certainly lists all the lakes, lakes probably that some people have never heard of, that you can recreate at. But maybe this is what we ought to be thinking about.
Yeah, and in Kenosha County Parks, there's something going on every day, so you feel free to go to KenoshaCounty.org and look at the Parks Department, and there's a great calendar of a number of things that maybe we'll hit on later in this discussion. But Kenosha County's financial position is very strong. We're at a AA-plus rating. We're one click away from being rated AAA by Moody's and Standard & Poor's and Fitch. We continue to work toward that goal. And why is that important? Well, whenever you borrow money for highway projects and infrastructure issues, we want to make sure that we borrow that at the lowest possible interest rate. We've got some 10-year notes under 2%, under right in that area, one point something. And, you know, when you look at that over 10 or 20 years, it's a good rate to have.
Yes, it is.
You put the CPI on there, you're actually not spending anything on it at that point. So we have the largest fund balance we've had in the last quarter century. We've had some of the lowest increases in levy and in the last 10 years. We've dropped our OPEB. Other post-employment benefits have declined from $132 million to about $72 million, which is a big deal for obligations when you're going to get rated. So all of these things put together has really put us for a couple of those upgrades that we received. And so we're in a strong financial position. When people ask us what we're rated, many other communities can't be as so bold to say we're just one notch below AAA. We're very worthy as a community and financially thrifty.
And I would imagine you would point out that our current debt is not a burdensome amount that you feel uncomfortable with?
No, our overall, all including debt, is lower than what it was 10 years ago.
And that's due to your brilliant management.
Well, a lot of it. I mean, we've invested a lot of money into the finance department, breaking down the silos that existed when I came into office, and also investing in IT. And we upgraded so that we could do a lot more with less with technology, and we're hiring people who can use that technology and are coming here because they want to use the technology.
That's terrific. I've noticed that over the years, and I think that you've done a great job personally of managing. Of course, the recent economic downturn and recovery have made your life a little more interesting in this regard. How do you see our needs for debt in the future, Jim?
Well, we try to bond for what we take off. If we take $10 million off, we try to put $10 on. I mean, we try to keep it at about within a couple million of that, depending on the rating. So the overall indebtedness doesn't reflect poorly on us when we go to the rating agencies. We've had a good story to tell on economic development. Who would have thought that when the county built County Trunk N, that's at Bullimore Forks, it's Washington Road where it went straight, and we built that for Gordon Foods, knowing there'd be three or four other lots that would be available for job creation in that area. Nobody thought one of those lots would be Amazon, which then beget the other U-Line facility west of the I, which then got the whole Paris Summer City deal going to then make thousands of acres, more available for economic development, for people constructing buildings and people working under those rooftops. It really has gone a long way since 2009 and moved forward. And I think we have a lot to be proud of, 2008 actually, to be proud of on the economic development that strategically we spent that money, but the investment that's been returned has been tenfold.
Well, I can swear and aver that N was probably the sleepiest road in the entire county when I was a teenager. That's for darn sure. And now you have to make even more improvements on that whole Washington Road S-142 corridor, don't you?
Right.
Aren't we at a point now where we're at the breaking point again?
Yeah, we're going
to
be...
Probably a good problem to have. A bad problem would be to have no traffic and no jobs.
Exactly. We're in the point of making that a four-lane road from Green Bay Highway 31, Green Bay Road to I-94.
That H and 142 intersection is a real, it's kind of dangerous, actually.
Yes, and we're going to have to rework that to take, to improve the safety there. And there's going to be a number of properties taken. Nothing's been for sure, but we're in the process of lining those things up now, and you could see acquisition occurring next year sometime, or at least the notification of that to get that ball rolling. That will be like 165 is the Pleasant Prairie, except I call it 165 light. You know, it's not going to have it's going to have industrial parks by it, but it's going to be a different profile going out a little bit. But it's going to be a major ingress to the city of Kenosha.
No, we need another one east-west.
And we need it a little bit faster than it is currently, and that's what we're trying to design it to not have as many slowdown areas.
Well, that would be a major improvement for north side traffic getting in and out of the city, because right now it's a real bottleneck. Now, when do you actually think construction of that would start? And, by the way, where is the bucks coming from?
Well, we have drawn down some federal and state funds on this, where we're going to be paying between 50 and 20 and 50%. Now, that shifts because it depends how many more rounds of STP funds flow through the federal government.
STP?
It's state transportation dollars that come from a program in the federal government. And we've qualified for this, and we're going for the second segment. Right now we have the money to do Green Bay Road to H, or just short of H, right in that area. Now we're going for the next segment from H to I-94. And we want to program those in so we're all done by 2023. That's a ways off, but it comes quicker than you think. And if you don't plan for it now, you aren't going to get it done.
Now, can this be shut down in Madison like some of the I-94 construction was?
Things can be slowed down. I think when they're this intricately tied to economic development, it's very difficult to put the project aside. So I think we've been in the sweet spot for development, and it would be suspect, in fact, if somebody threw sand into the gears on this project.
I've got my fingers crossed. We're here with Kenosha County Executive Jim Kruser today on Community Matters, talking about what matters in southeastern Wisconsin generally with the Foxconn project possible, and a lot about specifically what's going on here in Kenosha County. Jim, let's change the topic just for a minute. I won't ask you what your latest contacts have been with the Russians, but...
They're listening now.
They tune in on the Internet, no doubt. But seriously, there's been a lot of talk about the sanctity of our elections, penetration of our elections by hackers from wherever, getting into records of states and municipalities. What are you hearing from the state about our county elections? I mean, Mary Kubicki and her deputy, Edie Lumoth, everyone knows they do a great job. I don't think people are concerned so much about how our elections run here with all the changes there have been in the last few years. It's been really amazing to see how smoothly everything has been going with our elections. But with this new environment, what are you thinking, and what are people telling you from the state?
Well, I first of all, I think it's a shame because I think it puts a damper on the election process, and some people will say, well, now that's an excuse not to vote. And I think that's terrible because the election officials here do a fantastic job. Mary Kubicki is top-notch county clerk. The countywide elections are run, in a very professional manner. The city clerk does a great job down at City Hall. I mean, they work together on these to make them come off without a hitch. It's disappointing that this whole situation has happened. It's out of our arena for investigation. You know, when they come forward with the, again, the details of what has happened, we're going to look at it with great interest. One of the things Kenosha County has done is really been concerned about getting infiltrated by anybody in our system. We have the court records. We have the 911 system. We have all the county data. And we're a 200 and some million dollar operation. We've got a lot of privacy issues with the nursing home. We go through regular simulations, and we've contracted with people to try to hack us to find out where our vulnerabilities are. We're doing an upgrade next year on all of our systems so to prevent us. But middle-sized governments and middle-sized utilities are now being the target of some of these hacking schemes, especially those people who control dams or electric utilities in their area. Most of that is in other states, but it's one of these things we need to be on top of and stay in front of the curve and not be caught with an issue to have things handed out or information lost. All of our laptops that we have are encrypted now, so that if somebody gets it, it's going to take great difficulty to get anything off of them, because it's a numbers game. If you have 100 laptops, all right, at some point one is going to get lost or stolen.
You can count on that, right?
So let's count on nobody being able to hack it if that occurs, and that's what we've been on the forefront of. But it's an issue that we're doing what we can at local government. How the federal elections go and how all this is working, there's no fraud that I know of in Kenosha County at any level, and I think it's run with professionally and integrity and professionalism.
Does the state have any role in giving you guidance on this these issues currently?
Well, they have guidelines on that, but also the ultimate accountability comes down locally.
So they're not consulting with you or providing expertise?
That would be with the county clerk through the Constitution. It's not even statutory. She runs the elections.
The homeless has been an issue. You've heard us talk about the homeless if you're listening to this program regularly. The county is pretty much responsible for human services. That's the unit of government that provides human services. What's your take on what the current status is of the homeless issue, and maybe we'll probe a little more deeper in it? We have the Shalom Center, which is a wonderful organization. They've got wonderful new facilities underway. They have a limited program. They don't take what I call the non-cuddly homeless. We have shortage of mental health facilities here. First step, the refuge shelter is closed. We have what I kind of call a system of, it seems to me, I'm no theologian, but it seems to me we have a system of what I'd call transactional mercy for the non-cuddly homeless population in particular. By that I mean transactional mercy. I mean that you do this step, and then we will show you mercy by giving you this. And you do the next step, and we will show you mercy by doing that. Halo is finding out in Racine that doesn't work with everybody. Sometimes you need individualized case management plans and not just some one-size-fit-all. So there's a lot of questions rolled up in there. I've given you time to think about an answer and formulate one, Jim. Why don't you have at it? There's a lot of questions in my mind about this issue because I don't see it going away. And the reports I get from county officials about the rosy picture don't jibe with accounts I get from CUSH, Congregations United to Serve Humanity, from ministers who are out dealing with people on the streets. So I'm a little puzzled.
Okay. I'm going to start by disagreeing with your premise that it's only a county issue. It's a community issue. And it takes a community discussion among a number of levels of government, but also community organizations, the clergy, and other activists in our community. So what has the county been doing on this? So first of all, we've dealt with the revolving door on opiates with the sheriff. Pilot program, highly successful. I'm going to get back to the point. I'm just taking areas that we could grab onto that are in the forefront of our county. There's a lot of issues.
And that's a good one. That's a model program.
It's a model program.
Yeah.
The sheriff has worked with Human Services, and the sheriff and I have worked together to stop the revolving door. When people are in jail, They're off opiates. We can give them Vivitrol if these people really want to turn their life around. We're spending the money on people who are salvageable, who want to do this, who want to get their kids back, who want to get their life in order. And Vivitrol is a drug that works for opiates as well as alcohol. They're given a shot once a month. We do that for a number of months, and then we have them case managed. And you know what? We've had tremendous success. It's been in the 90%, 90-plus percent success rate. The DA has gone on with the opiates on the first-time offender. In other words, last chance. It's a felony right now. A lot of young people are making poor choices. Now, do you want to ruin their trajectory for life? And the sheriff has been bold. District attorney has been bold. No other district attorney has done this in our state and said, look, I will try to salvage people who want to really turn the corner. But he brokers a tough deal. I mean, there's no slippage on it. And he's got you for 2 years. And if you mess up, you're back where you belong in the trick box that you put yourself in by taking the drug. But those people who really want to earn their way out, you know what? You get your second chance. But you're going to have to work hard and stay on the program and get tested through the process. Two successful programs that have just happened over the last couple of years.
I think that one is also regarded as a model, not just here but elsewhere, and that's another thing to be very proud of. Because we know that people who don't want to be helped at all cannot be helped. If you've ever had a friend who's been a real alcoholic or a drug addict, you already know that.
And we're trying to use county government dollars wisely to maximize the input. Because incarcerating people is not cheap. It is not inexpensive. So we're trying to get the populations out of the jail that we can, and so the taxpayers don't have to pay for that for the long haul. So now we had a situation occur where St. Luke's Center came in, reduced the number of beds for mental health placements. And we moved quickly down here, and the county board and the city council and the mayor and I worked together to, in fact, take Kenosha Kids, Kenosha Health Youth Development Services, who handles a lot of the mental illness issues at one of their sites. And they had 11 beds. Many of them were not handicapped accessible, and we needed to expand that. So we've expanded that from 18 to 20, or from 11 to now between 18 and 22 beds, put crisis intervention there so that we avoid having people in the hospital emergency room who get chaptered, who could maybe be diverted to this placement.
Now, how many beds can you take there now?
There's going to be 18 to 22 beds, somewhere in that area.
When it's all finished.
When it's all finished. Mm-hmm. Now, here's the deal. It costs us $200 a day. Who do we house? We house you and your neighbors. We have over 700 people who stop in for 3 or 4 days. It's voluntary. They can walk out anytime they want, but they get back on their meds. Maybe they came off their meds. Maybe they had an alcohol issue with mental health issues. They get back on their meds. They get straightened out, and they go back home.
This is a short term.
This is a short term turnaround. It's about $200 a night. Now, the one in St. Luke's was about $700 a night. Well, now the beds aren't there. So if you're out of beds here, the next stop is Mendota at $1,250 a night. So the ROI on this is smart. We're keeping people in our community. We're reducing law enforcement transporting these people. And we're getting people immediate help. And if crisis is involved, maybe they get diverted on other areas where they need to put their life back together and back on track.
It's hard to get family and clergy and other spiritual people involved with an individual if they're in Mendota as well.
You lose all family contact, and that's one of the keys to bringing people back and getting them stabilized.
Right.
It's financially viable and very cost-effective to do it in this way. All the partners involved should be commended. We did this big push on this, and the mayor was a big partner with me on this. And I think the community wins.
It was a remarkably fast decision and implementation. It made my head spin. I couldn't believe it got done that quickly. It was
well,
amazing.
Ron Frederick has been talking to me about this, the former Community Programs Board Director, for 8 years. And you know what? I said, when it's time, it's time. And this was the time, and there was a force of losing the beds in Racine to now having that happen, and we just happened to have that building open that was for sale, and the owner kept it on the market just for us and not anyone else, and we got it done in 3 or 4 months, and that was pretty quick time.
But then there are the other issues.
And then the issue of a First Step, which has been a when you view First Step from the outside and the generous amount of work people have given to that, I commend them for that. From the governmental side, I have a fiduciary responsibility to have outcomes and to measure things with the financial metrics. And First Step did not want to comply with those financial metrics, so we did not work together. They were on their own, and they wanted it that way. In other words, we didn't have access to their books or their clients or sign-in sheets or try to have to fix other problems they would have. And so we focused the county to work with the Shalom Center. And we gave, we supported them with $250,000 for their building fund, which is small compared to some of the significant contributions people in our community made. And thank you to anyone who gave to the Shalom Center. It's money well spent. It's going to be a beautiful facility and handle a lot of people who are in need and in transition. And it bodes well for this community. And thank you all who have given to the Shalom Center. It's just a tremendous outpouring of giving there. And they do a great job. The Sharing Center out in Trevor does a great job. That is probably the biggest base we have out there. And they also have computers for upward mobility, enter in who's coming in, what kind of benefits they have, what do they qualify for, what don't they qualify for. Those are the two big operations the county really wants to see succeed, and Human Services really needs to have succeed in our community. Since First Step has closed, actually prior to them closing, many of their clientele have been looked at, and many have been diverted to other programs. They have. Has everybody been diverted? No, they haven't, Len. Some people don't want to change. And that is the next issue for people to have a conversation about, is what to do about people who don't want to comply with rules.
Or in some cases can't because of
their
condition.
Won't shower, won't do certain things, are high, or and won't be, and haven't broken a law to be thrown in jail.
Some of the national statistics are that maybe 20% of that population has mental issues. I don't know, it depends on what your feeling is. Maybe they're not totally responsible for not being able to make those decisions. And I guess the question is, then, what do we do with those people? Yeah.
So what I've said is, this is a community discussion. Where did we get the Vivitrol program? I think that was a brilliant idea out of the county executive. It was a brilliant idea I took out of Los Angeles County. That's what I did. I took some of the best practices where science has caught up with some of these issues and applied them to our small town, which is getting bigger. But I take what we need to look at. What are other people doing? I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I want to find out what are the best practices for people who don't fit in the other programs, and what is the most cost-effective way to addressing those issues? You know what? We covered a lot of ground in this last couple of years on issues that are opioids and mental health, and we're going to continue to focus on mental health and the heroin issue. But we need to have a conversation and not just jump and say, we need to do this, this, and this. Because I'm going to ask the questions, is it fiscally viable? Is it the best practice? What are other people doing? And where does this fall in the decision-making process? Because I'm not going to just have a knee-jerk reaction from county government. We don't work that way. We have a process.
What about what's going on in Racine with HALO, which has expanded its program beyond the barriers that Shalom is currently using? And they have good reasons for their barriers, and I don't think anybody disputes that Shalom has made its decisions on very sound grounds. But I don't think anyone wants to see another nonprofit organization created in this community. And if Shalom is the expert on homelessness, can they be an umbrella for something else that's a little different? Could that be a viable solution, do you think, in terms of fine-tuning this eventually at Shalom Center?
They need to get up and running. They need to get going before you add on a new program to them, out of fairness. And I think that's their concern, is they want to do what they do well. They want to get it up and going. And we have homework to do on this, of whether it goes with them like Halo. What are the results of Halo? That's still relatively new. The numbers are not in yet.
No.
And neither are the full expenditures, which I think are going up. So it's from our financial responsibility, I want to do what's in the best interest at the lowest cost that can address issues. But
what could you do to foster that community conversation?
We can't do everything to all people at one time.
I agree with you about the community conversation. If I were a board president or the executive director of Shalom, I would have exactly the same position. I would get things finished now that I've started before I did anything else. But how's that community conversation going to get started? What could you do or the mayor do to get that community conversation going?
Well, Len, do you think none of these discussions have started yet?
Well, I think maybe they have.
They have.
And besides on my program.
And they're in the early stages. But whenever a program comes up, we have to talk about how it's going to be funded and is it sustainable.
You know, you've had a lot of interest in politics your whole life, and not just within the confines of Kenosha County. What does Jim Cruiser see ahead for the gubernatorial elections in Wisconsin?
I think it's...
Is there going to be a real race for governor next time around?
Well, what my job has been as county executive is that whatever happens at the federal level, whatever happens at the state level, we're nimble and we're able to change, because only 30%, if you live in the city of Kenosha, 30% of your property tax or 30% of county government is on your property tax. I think the city's about 42%. The unified school district's about 34%, and we're about 18% of the tax bill in the city of Kenosha. 70% of our funding out of our $200 million comes from somewhere else. A lot of it's state and federal money. We're the conduit for all the state and federal programs, child support, court system, veteran service officer, all the human services, all the kinds of aides, the social workers that do the most difficult work of taking children away from their parents until they can be reunited or having to be put up for adoption, working with foster care, which anyone interested in being a foster parent, we could use your support in taking a child for a while. Our numbers are clicking up slightly, and even as a temporary foster parent, if you're interested, please call Human Services or my office at 653-2600, and we will direct you. You will not be doing it alone. There's an organization, and most foster parents are just like you and I that have a family or had a family and now ready have an extra room, and you're ready to go, and sometimes you don't have an extra room, but it's something that has really made this community strong, and if anyone's interested, please get a hold of me. But getting back to the state budget, I'm looking forward to Kenosha County being the leader still in the state in job creation, economic development and growth, and smart growth, not just to grow for growth's sake. We're getting some high-quality companies paying some good money here.
I'd like to touch, before we close, Jim, on the quality of life here. You mentioned the parks and some of the things going on this summer. They're talking in Madison about increasing fees for the use of the state parks, which is certainly troubling me, because I think they should be more open to people rather than class structure set up for our public parks. But be that as it may, our public county parks are free. They're wonderful. We even have a beer garden at Pets now, which I hope is going to be popular and help pay for Pets. Tell us a little bit about that in the minute or two we have left to talk about quality of life here.
We have disc golf courses at a number of our parks. Fox River is rated the third best in the state. We have off-road bike trails. We have a number of on-road bike trails, hundreds of miles, on which people can go on. Petrified Springs has walking trails of about 2.5 miles off the road. The beer garden has been phenomenally successful over the last two weeks. We've had over 10,000 people.
My goodness.
A week at Petrified Springs Park. Now, people are rediscovering pets, and not all at the beer garden. They're doing other things now. So it's really kind of a nice effect that it's had on that. We have programming at the other parks, Pringle Woods. If you haven't been to KD Park on the west end of the county, it's a lake surrounded by walking paths built by at-risk youth, and it is beautiful to
walk
around.
What's the state of completion there? There was
it's open.
It's
an open. It's a passive park, and it's really a beautiful lake for you to walk around.
All right. I'll put that on my agenda for real soon.
I think you should. So there's also a park list under the Parks Department, under KenoshaCounty.org. One of the things that business use as an indicator is quality of life amenities. They like the Wi-Fi. We have Wi-Fi at Pets, Wi-Fi at Silver Lake Park. People are able to do their work while they're at the park. That's an important amenity. Civic Park across from the courthouse and also down by Harbor Park, down by the marina, all have county Wi-Fi in partnership with the city and Carthage College and the Kenosha News. So we've been finding the way for to help millennials find a way to do work, to be acclimated here, and to have that kind of excitement in Kenosha County so they'll come here to live and make this their home.
You don't have to be a teenager or a 20-something to want to use the Internet, the downtown Kenosha, and the more people who wake up to the fact that public internet and public spaces in this community, the better off we're going to be, because it's going to encourage people to come on tourism basis, because people expect to be able to go to a big city or a small city and in the public spaces be able to access wireless without having to log in at each business down the street. That system is crazy and is very myopic. I'm glad we're moving away from that.
Yeah, it's exciting times in Kenosha County. Everything isn't perfect, but I'll tell you, a lot of the good ideas come from people like listeners on your show. I'm always looking forward to new ideas to make Kenosha County a better place to live, work, and raise a family, and please send them to me if you have any.
Aren't you worried that if they do increase the fees at places like Bong, it's going to just drive more people into pets and
it's
overcrowd our parks?
I want the grass worn out in our parks. It's for too long, it's been not used enough, but I think it's poor public policy to raise the state park rates. I think if you try to make a profit on those parks, you're just doing a disservice to people. More and more people are living in apartments and don't have a yard. Open up those public spaces. Let them go roam and go for a hike and enjoy the wildlife.
The idea behind our public parks was not to create a class system of entry into those parks based on your income. That's my probably over-liberal belief in some minds, but I think it defeats the purpose of the public park idea.
That's right. And by the way, the beer garden is still a public park. You can bring your own food in, even your own non-alcoholic beverage, and use that facility.
Jim, what's your vision for what you would like people to do next in Kenosha County to help mobilize the community support that we need to improve our lives here?
Well, I think that we are fortunate to live in a community that has some of the highest per capita volunteerism than there is anywhere in the state. And if you volunteer for whatever is your passion, whether it be your church, whether it be a human service organization, the Boy Scouts, the Girl Scouts, 4-H, whatever it can be, that makes the fabric of our community stronger every day. So thank you to all the volunteers and the scout leaders and the people who are doing the dairy breakfast this morning out in Brighton. And those type of events make us the biggest small town in Wisconsin.
Volunteering is certainly my passion. If anyone knows me, they know that. And I think we should include all the people who volunteer their time, because they certainly aren't totally reimbursed for their time, who are participating in our very many local units of government here in Kenosha County. Thank you, Jim Kruiser, County Executive, for being my guest today on Community Matters. As always, I encourage my listeners to listen, read the papers, get on the Internet, find out what's going on, go to the county webpage, find out how you can volunteer in one of the many ways Jim has mentioned, and roll up your sleeves. Get informed, get involved, and be back next week for Community Matters. This is Len Iaquinta.
You've been listening to Community Matters, a program that airs every Saturday morning at 11:15 on WGTD. For an online recording of today's show, log on to WGTD's website at WGTD.org, click Talk, and go to Community Matters. Your gateway to public radio is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.
From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, CrossFit Kenosha will host free yoga sessions at